In a remote mountain valley in Ecuador, coffee and sugarcane farmers face the dismal prospect of being forced off their land by a Canadian mining company. Copper Mesa Mining Corporation promises the farmers that development is the path to prosperity in the Intag region. Malcolm Rogge traveled to Ecuador to document the farmers' struggles. He is interviewed by CHRY's Candace Moores in the kitchen of his home in downtown Toronto. They speak about his new feature-length documentary titled Under Rich Earth. What is your movie Under Rich Earth about?
Well, Under Rich Earth is a feature-length documentary that tells the story of a group of farmers in the Intag Valley in Ecuador who find themselves unwillingly faced with a conflict with a Canadian mining exploration company. And the story begins in September of 2006, and it basically covers about a year and a half of the escalating conflict between these communities and the mining company. And ultimately, this results in a series of really incredible events that took place that are really quite unique. And the film documents all of this. And I think it provides a person who doesn't know anything about these sorts of conflicts that are taking place not only in Ecuador but in other parts of the world. It provides a person with a kind of an insight into the complexity and the stakes of these kinds of conflicts as they evolve over time.
What were you hoping to accomplish with the documentary?
Particularly when I began making the film, there was very little awareness among ordinary Canadians, and there was very little discussion in the media here and in the political arena about the kinds of conflicts that are going on in places like Ecuador, but not only in Ecuador, often involving Canadian mining companies. And also, of course, these kinds of conflicts can develop wherever there's a kind of a large-scale extractive industry working, so the oil industry and other industries as well. So my goal was to be able to tell a story that Canadians could understand and relate to, and to try and raise some awareness in Canada about the as I said before, about the complexity of these conflicts and the gravity of the situations that have arisen. One of the things that you often found coming from industry spokespeople was that they would try and minimize, you know, the extent of these conflicts and sort of try and, you know, say, well, you know, there's a few bad apples out there, but they're by no means the majority, and most of the companies operate you know, with the highest standards, and also to say that in many cases the problems that are taking place in these communities are problems that don't really emerge from the communities themselves, but in fact are being fomented by outsiders like environmental organizations and ecologists and this sort of thing. So this was the common line that one would hear, and it was sort of, that was the discussion had really been kind of frozen at that point, and I had hoped that through this film we could kind of break a little bit of that and try and get provide a vehicle to raise awareness and to generate more discussion at a deeper level about the kinds of problems that we're looking at right now.
How did you get involved in the project?
Well, this is a funny story. It was actually an old friend of mine who has been living and working in Ecuador for many years, and I worked in Ecuador as well. When I was actually a student at York University, I was doing my master's degree at York, And I studied law at Osgoode Hall Law School, and I went to Ecuador a couple of times and worked on looking at the social and environmental impact of the oil industry in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And it was basically through the people I met during that time that I became aware of what was happening in the Intag Valley in Ecuador around this mining project. And a friend of mine and a colleague came back from Ecuador with photos and basically convinced me that it was really important for me to go there myself and to actually speak to people and to get the story from the horse's mouth.
And how did you develop relationships with some of the community-based groups in Ecuador? You know, how did you approach them, and were people receptive to your documentary project?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that this kind of a project, and certainly in terms of the way that the film actually, the final result of the film, it wouldn't have been possible for somebody to sort of just show up in the community and start, you know, pull out a camera and start videotaping. I mean, clearly that. I mean, people do that, and I mean, for certain kinds of reporting jobs, reportage, news, you know, to cover the news and that sort of thing, you know, that's basically the only option you have. You know, you send your people out there, and they tell them to get the story as quickly as possible. I took a different approach with this film. It was, of course, took a lot longer, but I think the result is something that has a longer shelf life than just a news broadcast. And so it was very important for me right from the get-go to make sure that even before I went to Ecuador, you know, is to make contacts with people in the community. You know, there's no real sort of rocket science to this process at all. It's really just making sure that you respect the fact that you know, there are already processes in place in the communities. There are certain people and certain organizations which play a certain role within the community, and that if you want to have the, you know, participation and the cooperation of the people in the communities, you need to respect those organizations. And so you have to kind of you know, first you have to you know, meet with them, talk to them, tell them what you're doing, explain to them why, you know, I had to explain to people why I actually felt it was important to tell this story, and in particular why it was an important story for Canadians. And one of the things that I think was most important in terms of getting people to understand and to appreciate the nature of the project was the point that this is a story for Canadians. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, sort of usurp the Ecuadorian media or any, you know, this is not an attempt to create any kind of, you know, I'm not there to educate the people who are experiencing these conflicts. I'm there to document what they are doing and to share that in Canada with people who really don't know anything about the kinds of things that are going on. So people were very receptive to that idea, and clearly understood the importance of that right from the get-go. So once that was clear, what my objectives were, people were very generous. You know, people were you know, provided me with a lot of support in terms of meeting other people, in terms of getting to where I needed to go in order to tell the story properly.
What was your favorite part about shooting the documentary?
Well, that's a tough question, because it's been an incredible experience in so many ways. And but, you know, overall, I have to say the funnest part was really just spending time in the communities. And I made friends. I enjoyed myself while I was there. I was inspired by the people who I met, and I was overwhelmed, you know, by their tenacity and the fact that they were so incredibly well organized and determined to win this fight And so, you know, that was a really incredible thing to be a witness to, firsthand witness. And of course, you know, coming from, you know, living here in Toronto and, you know, being a Canadian, I think that one thing that we don't really often have an opportunity or in our lifetime to really understand is, you know, what does it take for a group of people, in this case, a group of farmers who really are quite modest in terms of their, you know, their livelihoods and that sort of thing. But what does it take for them to stand up and say, no more, you know, we're not going to take it anymore. And to really, to quite literally put their lives on the line to protect what they have and to protect the livelihoods of their children and their families. And, you know, that was an incredible thing to be able to experience firsthand and to see it unfold in front of me.
What was your least favorite part, or maybe what was your biggest challenge in completing the project?
Well, I think that's pretty simple to answer that question, because I think this is a problem that many artists and filmmakers are facing in Canada and around the world, and that is, you know, just the trying to find the resources to make the film. You know, it costs a lot of money to make a movie. It costs a lot of money to distribute a film and to get it out there so that people see it. There's no point in making a film that nobody sees. So I've spent a lot of time, you know, trying to get the resources that I need, not only just to make the film, but also to keep the film, to get the film out there. And stories like this, you know, there's a perception, you know, that they're less interesting to the public than, you know, than entertainment, for example. And, you know, documentaries which are, you know, perhaps geared towards more of an entertainment, you know, sort of focus are funded, while more serious documentaries that are dealing with complex subjects, perhaps in other countries, are hard to sell in terms of getting support from broadcasters. So that was a really tough slog. It was a really tough slog getting the resources together to make the film. But I was, you know, after being in the Intag Valley for a few weeks, and after seeing the people and seeing how, you know, how what they were doing with what little they had, you know, it was more even, you know, even pushed me even further to say, well, you know, I just have to make this film, you know, I just have to figure out how I'm going to do it no matter what. And, you know, eventually I was able to pull everything together. I mean, it was a long process. And, you know, another issue, of course, is in the media here, everybody wants to know what's happening now. You know, they're not so interested in something if it's old. You know, this often you hear the story, oh, that's old, you know, that's yesterday's news. And so I had to create a film that I felt would have legs, you know, that would have a longer shelf life, something that you could watch now. And even though these events took place 2 or 3 years ago, you still feel that, wow, this is an important story, and I'm glad I saw this film. I'm glad I know that this happened, you know, because it makes me think about not only that situation, but all the other conflicts that are going on now around the world. So the hardest part was raising the money, and I think you probably hear that from a lot of filmmakers.
Do you feel like the project was successful? Are you happy with the outcome?
Yeah, I certainly am very happy with the outcome. I was in Havana, Cuba, in the beginning of December. They invited me and showed the film as part of the Havana Film Festival, which in Cuba is called El Festival Internacional de Cine, de Nuevo Cine Latinoamericano. And the film was nominated in a category of the best documentary category for the best documentary about Latin America by a non Latino Americano. So it was a, sort of a mixed, perhaps somewhat dubious distinction, But when I talked to people in Havana, you know, they said, no, you know, this is a very important, this is a recognition of an important contribution to the understanding of the sort of political realities that exist in North America, North and South America. And there's interest in the film in Canada, but not only in Canada, but also in Latin American countries as well. So I'm very pleased about that.
I feel like we should talk a little bit more about broader social justice movements, because News Now is a show that's focused on underreported news, but also is focused on broader social justice movements. And so I'm wondering, how would you locate this particular project within broader social justice movements?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this film is really just a part of a much larger process that's going on. And that, if somebody had the time and the resources to track it, to follow it, and to study it, I think it would make for some interesting, project. The heart of this story really lies in these very small communities in this valley in Ecuador called the Intag Valley, where they're very, they're through their own processes over a decade. You know, they are very aware of the kinds of environmental and social impacts that could ultimately, transform their homes and their communities into something unlivable for them, because of the environmental impact. And so, you know, the heart of this story is our farmers who are saying, we want to be heard. You know, we want our concerns and our rights to be respected. Now, in terms of broader sort of political and social context and a broader movement, you know, I think one has to keep that in mind, that there's the heart of this story is in these very remote communities. Now, what they did, which is so interesting and worthy of our respect and understanding, is they understood what they needed to do to win this fight, and that they couldn't just win it at the local level. You know, this is not something that this was not a fight that they were going to win at the local junta parroquia, at the level of the parish. This was not something that they were going to win in the provincial level, even at the national level. They understood right from the beginning that they had to go global on this story. And so they were very smart, and they set out a whole kind of set of objectives and strategies to make sure that that their allies in Canada and in Europe and in other countries cared about what was going on. And so they created links with environmental organizations, human rights organizations, social justice groups, and politicians in Canada and in the United States and in many in Germany and in Japan. And so, you know, ultimately, it was the people in the communities who were driving this process. And I came along on that wave with this, you know, idea to make a film, to tell the story to Canadians. And they thought, you know, oh, that fits in, you know, that fits into the picture. You know, if I had come along and suggested something that they felt didn't fit into their picture in terms of what they thought the overall strategy was, you know, they probably wouldn't have been very interested in what I was doing. But because it fit in to their overall strategy and approach, you know, they welcomed it. And so, you know, I'm really just an observer and an interpreter of the events that took place and of the efforts of these people in these communities. And I'm a filmmaker, so I'm able to tell that in a way through the medium of cinema in such a way that ordinary person, you know, from Toronto can go to see the film and without a lot of prior knowledge, and to come out of it thinking, yeah, you know, I think I understand something. I think I get something that I didn't know before, or that I perhaps perhaps a person will be motivated, you know, to and will understand, you know, where they fit also into this, just into this larger process that I've just described.
Thanks a lot for your time. Do you have any final thoughts or comments that you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, yes. Just please come to see the movie. It's playing at the Bloor Cinema on February the 13th. That's Saturday. At 6:30 it starts. We have two speakers who are going to be at the event. One is the Honorable John McKay, who's a Member of Parliament for Scarborough Guildwood. And he has brought a private member's bill before the House of Commons, which has already gone through second reading, and it's not affected by the prorogation of Parliament. It's because it's a private member's bill, it stays on the order list, so it will be taken up. It'll be one of the few orders of business that will actually be taken up after the House comes back in March. And he will be there to talk about the bill. He'll also be there for the Q&A. And another person who will be there is a Toronto lawyer, Murray Klippenstein. Now, this is very interesting. Murray Klippenstein represents three farmers from the Intag Valley, people who play an important role in the film, Marcia Ramirez, Polivio Perez, and his brother Israel Perez. They're suing the Toronto Stock Exchange, the Copper Mesa Mining Corporation, and a couple of the company directors here in Toronto in the Ontario courts for what they allege to be violations of their human rights. So that lawsuit is actually ongoing right now as we speak, and Murray Klippenstein will be there to talk about the lawsuit and will also be there for the Q&A. So if you're interested in these issues, if you think this is important, an important story, and something you want to learn more about, come to the Bloor Cinema on February the 13th, and you know, you can ask them your own questions. Now, the other thing is, I'm going to be selling DVDs at the screening as well. So it's the DVD launch as well for Under Rich Earth. So that's I hope everybody comes out to that.
You have been listening to an interview with filmmaker Malcolm Rogge talking about his new feature-length documentary titled Under Rich Earth. Under Rich Earth screens this Saturday, February 13th, at the Bloor Cinema in Toronto, beginning at 6:30 p.m. Under Rich Earth will also be screened at various film festivals and venues from coast to coast to coast across the country. For CHRY's News Now, I'm Candace Moores.